The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and separation of church and state are values you hold, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you. The Nonprofits. I'm not Dennis LeBay, and neither is Jeff D. nor Russell Glasser with me. None of them are coming to you, live or otherwise, from the Freethought Library in Austin, Texas, which, even if it did exist, would not be happening on the 18th of October, 2017, which isn't today. The Atheist Community of Austin, if there was such a thing, is a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, which there isn't, has never heard of the nonprofits. If you want to learn more about this non-existent ACA and its non-involvement with the nonprofits, you can waste your time dialing 512-220-6561 in an effort to connect with a voicemail that isn't there, or trying the URL www.atheist-community.org, expecting an error message. If the nonprofits was actually real, they would broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. But since they're not, they don't. They also pretend to have a chat room that you can reach by following the directions at a similarly fictitious website, www.nonprofitsradio.com. So you can sit back and relax and have some wine, secure in the knowledge that nothing's going to happen.
It was awfully negative.
Well, it would be negative, but it wasn't.
It wasn't a double negative, though. You didn't cause the show to exist again by structuring it in a way where it doesn't not exist.
Right. No, but there were a lot of negatives.
There were a lot of negatives. They didn't stack that way. Hi, everybody.
Welcome. Howdy.
And that was for the people out there, but for you guys.
Oh yeah, well,
hello to you too.
Say hello if I want.
Everybody have a good 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Here in the studio.
Yes. Yeah. We'll pretend we didn't chat before the show.
Yeah. We didn't say anything important during the show. Talked about Star Trek and Orville. And
that's that. Right. That's right.
It's apparently the major dilemma of our age.
Okay. Oh, if only that were true.
It does serve as
yes. Star Trek versus Orville is clearly the most pressing social problem of our time.
I could happily live in that universe.
It serves as something, as a distraction, right?
Yes, yes.
From real issues. openly secular day. Friday, October 20, serves as a call to action for those with a secular identity by encouraging openness and dialogue around one's identity and beliefs. To learn more about Openly Secular Day and see other ways you can get involved, check out the Openly Secular Day page, https://openlysecular.org/OSD.
There's got to be some jokes involved.
That wasn't funny at all.
I can't reach that.
Are you guys openly secular?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Easy to Google.
Are you only?
Yeah, I whip out my secularism every chance I get.
Wasn't there some kind of thing about you should be secular in a closet? No?
No.
That was some other thing.
That was another thing. Also, the hair growing on the palms, it's something else entirely. It has nothing to do with secularism.
Okay. There is a thing going on Facebook that we might want to spend a moment on. The Me Too thing.
Oh, yes.
Going on in Facebook. It's not a directly atheism related issue, but we've touched on the whole sexism thing.
It is sad and depressing.
I did notice it at first and tried to spend some time trying to work out for myself what it was. I think I know now.
And it's apparently not new, has a history, and there's some controversy involved in that history and stuff. But basically the idea is there's people raising awareness about abuse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. By saying that they have been victims.
This is a reaction to the Harvey Weinstein story.
I think that's probably what triggered this latest spate of it. And this response you're encouraged to give if you are not one of those people.
Yes.
Is to say, I believe you. And as atheists who deal with having our belief demanded from us on a regular basis, can have a knee-jerk reaction to that I would just want to spend a moment on. I felt that knee-jerk reaction myself and realized it was misplaced.
Right.
Because it does matter how reasonable the thing is that you're being asked to believe, right? This is a real problem in the real world that really affects people and is really a big problem. And it's perfectly reasonable to give the benefit of the doubt to folks who say that they have been victims of it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you absolutely know for sure that they are telling the truth, and that's not the point.
Right.
The point is you're acknowledging that this is a real thing and not calling the person who's revealing this a liar.
Right. Because
it's not one of those claims that demands a vast amount of evidence.
Right.
That's true.
If I can contextualize it a little bit, Harvey Weinstein was a big shot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I threw out the name, so I feel like I should give some background, but it's relevant to this belief issue. Harvey Weinstein was a big shot Hollywood producer, produced a lot of really good movies. But it turned out that he was basically taking advantage of young actresses for years and years and years and paying them under the table to hush them up. And a lot of people came out all at once in a flood because when you have a situation like this where there's a very powerful person who can impact the direction of your career – you tend to be really polite when they do something that's inappropriate or maybe even illegal. And when it comes to believing the victims, I think a lot of atheists have the appropriate knee-jerk reaction. And sorry, not appropriate in this case, but appropriately they always think extraordinary claims demand extraordinary evidence and don't stop to think that they've maybe calibrated wrongly what is extraordinary, because people getting harassed and manipulated by powerful people seems to be a very, very normal thing. And this is maybe
– Well, please call it a common thing.
Common, yeah.
Sorry.
Not normal, but common, okay. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I don't mean to – I don't want to normalize it.
Normalize, no.
But it's a very ordinary thing, which is why it generally doesn't require extraordinary evidence. And like you said, saying that you believe someone who's said something about a personal experience doesn't obligate you to defend that or prove it yourself. Right. And you're always supposed to be open to being proven wrong. But there's nothing wrong with a default position that this person had the bad experience that they said they did.
Right. Now, nobody should go to jail solely on the basis of that kind of belief, right?
Right.
We have a legal system and it should be applied. And if there are punishments to be meted out, they should be done within that system.
Yeah.
But in the meanwhile, you don't throw the people who've been victimized under the bus because of, you know, some sort of idea of purity of knowledge that you're not allowed to have a working hypothesis based on reasonable evidence.
Yeah.
Right.
Part of it might be the fact that to some people it's incomprehensible.
I think there's a lot of that. I think there's also a lot of, oh, that's icky and I just don't want to believe it.
Right.
Or, oh, you know, I don't know that person personally, but they seem like they should be an upstanding person and, you know, I mistrust attacks on people who are prominent just because.
Oh, it could also be they're naming somebody that you particularly like.
Or that.
And that could that could cause a bias, definite bias there.
So certainly, I suppose at some level there's a risk going too far the other way, mm-hmm. right? That's not what this is.
No.
And, I mean, I have had experiences where people that I knew personally and trusted turned out to have done something that was enough to make me not want to be their friend anymore.
Right.
And that is very difficult when it happens. And none of it has been as traumatic for me as being
actually being the victim of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I'm not trying to compare myself to people saying me too right now.
And they're not saying everyone is guilty.
Right. Right. Okay. Cool. Do we have any news there, Mr.
Yeah,
Mr.
we do. Although someone in the chat room was just Mr. asking Glasser. Me what your Twitter account is.
What, mine?
Yeah, yours.
My personal Twitter account?
Yeah.
That I mean, never use because I don't really enjoy the whole
tweet sometimes.
I'm hardly a part of the Twitter thing at all. Okay. It's just not where I spend my time. I know there's advantages to it and maybe I should.
But I kind of show up there, though.
I just don't. Yeah, give them Dennis's.
Dennis and I are real easy to find, just our first and last names with no spaces.
Yeah.
And we can tell – I'll tell them mine. It's not a secret. Okay. It's Monkey House Jeff.
Yeah.
Because of Monkey House Games, which is one of my two role-playing game companies.
Right. I'm not a huge tweeter myself, and about 50-50 is atheism stuff versus work stuff.
I'm too old to be a tweeter. I never developed the impulse, so I have to actually think about it.
Your tweeting gland is underdeveloped.
Yes.
There are a lot of social media platforms I'm comfortable with. Twitter is weird to me.
It is a bit weird.
Now, I hear that they're talking about increasing the size of the maximum size of a thing.
Yes.
And that there was an experiment. Anybody heard about how that went and see the reason.
Well,
the
people
reason,
died, you know. It
was, was there? It went very, very badly.
Oh yeah, it was terrible.
I fall in this weird range where I try to be succinct when I talk about things, but that's not succinct. That's like there's you can't have a deep discussion about anything in that format.
To me,
it's hard. You
things
can do
that strike
multiple posts in a row, but it gets really messy.
When I have a thought that seems funny and worth sharing, it's usually about paragraph length.
Yeah.
And so it's an enormous effort to cram it into 140 characters. I usually have to mercilessly cut out unnecessary words, and that's not how I write.
Cut out unnecessary words and I do not want to learn the weird abbreviated language.
I've seen people do a very long stream of tweets, 20 tweets in a row that are numbered. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at that point, why don't you just get a blog and link it?
It's
which is not to say I think there's anything wrong
with it. Won't get
the
notice that you get on Twitter.
I know some super smart people who write fascinating stuff that they promote via Twitter.
Is the advantage that, you know, that size of a message is convenient for, little tiny cell phone screens? Is that the advantage?
I don't think cell phones were as big. I mean, I think cell phones and Twitter maybe evolved synergistically.
Yeah. Well, the thing that drives me crazy
You're saying if it hadn't been for Twitter, that cell phones would be bigger?
Well, there's still one problem with Twitter that was the same problem with early Facebook.
Okay.
Is you only had the heart thing to click on to say
yeah.
Like or don't like.
But once Facebook put on the multiple emoticon responses. Oh, that's so much better. Even though they need more.
Somebody tweets, hey, a big story just erupted about sexual harassment. Yes. And then you click like, but you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, you can, and Facebook can go, oh, I'll click angry face. Yes. Yeah, that's the response. But on Twitter, it's like, yeah, you know, people have been murdered.
Yeah.
Do I hit the heart button? It just seems wrong.
Yeah. See, I still want one more symbol on Facebook, which is just kind of a acknowledged.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
I have
noted.
Seen, I appreciate that you have put this news into my news feed.
Yes. Yes.
And I have seen it. Now I shall think on this. You know,
yes.
Or not. Right.
So. I mean, here's a weird thing. And I guess this segment is just going to be old guys complain about technology they don't understand.
God damn it.
Wait till we get to the letters.
But yeah. Being a blogger for a long time, uh-huh. I feel like if I'm going to share something, I have to pour a lot of thought into it.
Right.
And like curate, oh, this is worthy of me putting out there on the internet. Now, I know I have good friends who basically seem to use Twitter as a chat room. Like,
Yeah.
I understand chat rooms, but like they tweet at one person or a bunch of people and the other person writes back immediately and they have a little whiff-whiff conversation.
It's just weird. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how to use Twitter.
Apparently.
Yeah, I know I don't know how to use Twitter to its maximum effect.
So,
yeah, of course.
Was there then some news?
Yeah. How did we get to talking about Twitter?
I have no idea.
Anytime you see a story that's worth tweeting, you should put the hashtag nonprofits news on it so that I know about it.
The guy who just went off for quite some time about how he's old and doesn't understand it.
I get hashtags. Those are real handy.
All right.
If you have the enough of a platform to encourage people to use a unique hashtag like nonprofits news.
See how I turned that around there where it was all three of us admitting to that exact same thing, but then I made it your fault?
Well played.
Thank you.
A listener named Jason Silverberg says that the war on Christmas has had its opening salvos fired already.
Boy. Oh, how many dead?
Damn, we need to do something about guns in this country.
And, I mean, geez, it's not even Halloween yet. And since we've been talking about Twitter for so long, maybe it won't surprise you to hear who fired that opening salvo.
Oh, who?
It was President Trump.
Really? Oh. Trump's going after Christmas now.
Christmas, I didn't get anything. Mm-hmm. Sad. What a lame holiday. Fake cheer.
Like that?
Yeah,
exactly like that. Mediaite reports.
He was like right there here in the room with us.
That he went to the Value Voters Summit.
Well, yeah.
That's a bunch of right-wing Christians. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. I thought so. And he rambled for a while about freedom of religion, as it were. And then started talking about stopping the attacks on Judeo-Christian values. He said he reminded people that we're saying Merry Christmas again as the world closes in on the holiday season. We're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore.
The hell?
They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct.
We're saying Merry Christmas again.
Well, guess
Obamacare is a thing of the past.
Yep.
And Puerto Rico, the nation of Puerto Rico, is fine now.
Yep.
And I totally get along with Mitch McConnell. And
McConnell.
What did I say?
O'Connell.
No, it's O'Connell. Mitch O'Connell.
Mr. Trump.
That sounds about
actually
right.
Actually, McConnell.
You're fired.
Fake names.
Although Mediaite hastens to point out that, don't worry, we still have 73 shopping days till Christmas, so there's plenty of time for people to say it. Thanks, Jason.
Happy holidays. Yeah, I know.
You're under arrest.
I'm under arrest.
Christmas police.
Are we going to do another War on Christmas episode? You were missing for the last one, Russell. But when I believe it was Tracy was here, we went to the front lines.
Well, she fought in my place bravely.
Yes, yes, yes. Did you? Oh, never mind. So Kane from Sydney, Australia writes, I was listening to a recent podcast where you guys mentioned the game Populous.
Yeah.
I immediately had a flashback to my childhood playing this game on the Sega Master System in the 1990s.
Wow. I think that must be Populous 1. Yeah,
likely. Mm-hmm. Since hearing you guys talk about it, I can't stop thinking about it.
I know,
and I really want to play the game again. I'm totally not being an Australian. Do any of you guys know where I can find this game online or buy a copy that would work on modern computers? Sorry, yes. I am out of touch with these things and not sure where to find old games like this. I have a Mac computer, which might also make it hard. Any help would be great, though I understand it is not your job to serve me.
No, but we happen to be super knowledgeable about old games.
We are three old gaming nerds. Uh-huh. And also, we've heard of a thing called Google.
Yes.
And just to it's this really simple thing. You go to google.com and you type in, like, you know, words that are about the thing that you're looking for, and it'll tell you. And to show you how easy this is,
what?
GOG.com, which I think means good old games.
I think it means good old games.
As opposed to Gog and Magog from the Bible.
Yes.
Gog.com has it for Mac OS X.
Good.
Mac OS X 10. 6.
OS
10 is an X.
None of us are Mac people.
No, none of us are. I'm just reading it literally the way they had it on their site. Mac OS X, and then in parentheses 10.6.8. And the direct link, which you could have Googled, is
let's punish our listeners.
He raked himself over the coals for asking us to do this legwork for him. So, you know, who am I to deny him?
But we are happy to do it.
I'm happy to do it this one time when there's a comedy bit connected. www.gog.com/game/populace.
Yeah.
And if you have the right kind of machine, they'll sell it to you. I think it was like six bucks.
Six bucks.
The series is $15. And, we're not paid by GOG.com in any way. Right. I'm a frequent customer. But
Populous 2 was really good.
Populous 3 is really good, I think. So I think we're saying
gonna have
by the series.
We're going to have edition wars about Populous here on the show.
If you have nostalgia for the original Populous, then by all means play 1. But I recommend checking out 3 if you're just looking for a game that 3. You might be delighted by.
Not sure I ever played.
It's called
3,
Populous: The Beginning, and it's by Bullfrog Games, which also made Dungeon Keeper and Magic Carpet, which are also great.
Magic Carpet is totally insane. Yes.
Oh, that was a sweet game.
We not only do not work for GOG.com, we're also don't like advertise things on our show.
Right. You're welcome.
Right, as part of the show. But I do want to point out to anyone out there who would maybe like to approach the Atheist Community of Austin and figure out a way to pay us money to advertise things on your show, that this listener wrote that after hearing us talk about this game, he couldn't stop thinking about it.
That's right.
So
we're particularly effective.
What we're saying is if you work at Bullfrog or are the Molyneux guy, Peter Molyneux, not Stefan Molyneux, the crazy YouTube cultist, send us money if you want to.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kane.
Unless you're Stefan Molyneux, we won't take your money.
That's right.
Star Trek.
Star Trek?
Moving really? From one nerd topic to another.
Star All right.
Is Star Trek still all atheist and stuff? Though I guess in the original Star Trek, there was a scene of like a chapel on the Enterprise. They had them.
There
was going to be a wedding, and like the groom got killed in an attack before the wedding took place, and Kirk was all sad.
Well, this story is from Matt Daguerre, and it's on pinknews.co.uk, which is a gay news website. Right-wing activist Peter LaBarbera has suggested that Star Trek should balance the number of gay characters on TV by having some ex-gay characters.
Oh,
right, because gay conversion therapy has been scientifically demonstrated to be bunk. So they should also balance all the science on Star Trek with, you know, Eastern healing mysticism and whatnot.
Both sides.
And they should balance the number of starships by also having pickup trucks in equal numbers.
Yeah.
And they should banish the number of planets by also having an equal number of asteroids. And what else can we balance?
Gosh, I don't know.
Balance the number of rooms on the Enterprise by having an equal number of corridors.
I think balance the planets by having no sky at all, but just a firmament.
Yeah,
that would be better.
Balance the number of transporters that they have by also having a thing that's like a grapple that grabs you by the head and it winches you down to the surface.
Balance
on a rope.
The number of bathrooms on the Enterprise by how many people?
Yeah. It's all kinds of things we could balance.
Sure.
That show is so imbalanced.
Golly.
Peter LaBarbera is the founder of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality.
Uh-huh. And he thought he would promote the truth about homosexuality by spreading a pack of lies.
Yeah, well, I think it pretty much goes without saying that if an organization has the word truth in their name...
Yes. Uh-huh. They are lying at you.
Absolutely.
Bald-faced every time.
100% of the time.
Yeah.
I should have been more on target with my gag here. Let me try again, right? Balance the number of Vulcans, right? With elves.
Sure.
Right? The number of
1 point years as good as another.
Tellarites, right? Tellarites with dwarves.
Sure.
Right? Klingons with orcs.
Yeah.
Orcs need orcs for sure.
The problem with this metaphor, this approach to it, is that both of those things are made up. Don't exist.
I know.
But
well,
it's
replace
tough.
Klingons with Peter LaBarbera.
but who takes the ring to Vulcan? I mean,
anyway, he says,
how did he like the episode of Orville? Where they had the all male race that had the conflict over the female child and whether she should be surgically modified to make her a guy.
Ew. Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same thing he's talking about.
He's making a big deal of this now because apparently Star Trek Discovery is the first show in the franchise to feature an openly gay couple on the starship.
That would be the first TV series episode.
Because Sulu in the reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Which apparently George Takei doesn't like. He doesn't like
He's
to
not
be...
angrily hostile to it. He's just going, I'm an actor and I played a role and that role didn't happen to have to do with that. So you don't need to change. It's hard. Leonard Nimoy had to write a whole book about how he was not Spock. You know, if they then turned around and made Spock more like Leonard Nimoy, wouldn't that be working against his goals?
Yes.
So...
Sure.
I get that.
Anyway, LaBarbera wants, I think, for people on the show to be cured of their homosexuality as a storyline. So
No,
well, they
I think
could
they
encounter
have,
it.
I think they should have episodes, and you know,
and freak
I bet they'll
and fix
do this.
It.
I bet they'll do this on the Orville, which is very ballsy, right? Yeah. You know, the episodes were like Kirk had. In fact, they just had one of these on Orville, where two of the main characters had to get modified to look like the aliens, so they could fit in and do espionage on them. They should go like amongst a gay race. And then main characters who were not gay should have to be modified to be gay so they could fit in, right, and move amongst them. I think they should do that.
That would be interesting and pretty much right up their alley. Wow.
Gosh. Or did I just say something really offensive? I don't
know. No, don't.
I don't know. I didn't mean it. If it was, that's totally not where I was going. The point I was making is, ugh. It would tick this guy off, right?
Yeah.
Having people
and
like
that's a good
having
thing.
People just flit back and forth between different genders whenever they feel like it.
Yeah.
Which is not what being
it's a
gay
win-win.
Is
win.
Which why is not what being gay is about. Which is why it'd be need tech. I'm digging myself. Deeper and deeper hole. I'm sorry. It didn't mean anything. Dan from Canada, Dan from Canada, says, in your last show, Russell mentioned that purgatory was reneged by the Pope 10 years ago. As an ex-Catholic, I don't think that's correct, The Pope at the time... Baby
did
Nazi,
he actually put A in his
no,
letter?
Oh, no,
he wrote that
he
in.
Put
though.
It, he put it his name, which I
oh,
take
he
as an
did?
Invitation. Yes, Dan from Canada, A.
So this is he was inviting you to make a funny accent.
The Pope Ratzinger, A, implied that like limbo, the place where like dead unbaptized babies go, is perhaps not real. Limbo. Not purgatory.
Right.
Purgatory.
Keep all these imaginary places.
Purgatory,
straight.
Which is where you go to throw up, right?
You would think. Welcome to purgatory. Here's your feather.
Welcome to hell. Here's your accordion.
Purgatory is still very real in the fantasy world of Catholicism.
Oh. Okay, I can't keep track of all these worlds. They
I
should
know,
they should
I know,
balance
right?
them more with Klingons.
Klingon.
Yeah, see, Limbo was part of first season Catholicism, right? And now they've taken that
Did
out.
They retcon in Limbo
in Catholicism, the Next Generation. they're acting like it didn't exist, and that's why in one of the prequel series, Catholicism Enterprise or something, they had to do the episode where
doesn't quite work.
where they destroyed Limbo.
Yeah.
As a side note, I always loved the idea of purgatory. Instead of going to heaven or hell, it's like a celestial pit stop to get you tuned up for heaven.
Ah.
It was a relief to know you didn't have to be perfect to go to heaven, but just good enough to get to purgatory. Well,
wow.
Relief or not, you know, those various tricks to try to suck non-believers into the cult are not appreciated. So
this is the place in this is the supernatural realm where we remove any remaining traces of mercy
That's right. That's what they get you ready. They like they numb you to the horror of being in heaven forever and watching loved ones
tortured
that didn't sign up.
Yeah, and you're just
get
happy
tortured
with
forever.
It. You're fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you have and no, shit like our latest
you have
popes.
Your compassion removed. So yeah,
right. If you have too much compassion, you're gonna have to wait in purgatory for a while until you can go to heaven and be a hateful prick. And like the current pope's deal, where he said that like you know non-believers can go to heaven, which seemed clearly designed to counteract the blasphemy challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Taking advantage of the bit in the Bible where it says if you have denied the Holy Spirit, then you can't ever.
Right.
Pope is rolling that back. Well, F you, Pope. That's how we were going to get you you people off our backs. So, okay.
All right. We have a Roy Moore story from Skeptic Mom on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Roy Moore, you may remember, was recently nominated as the Republican senatorial candidate from Alabama.
Yeah, and he's probably going to win, but good people are working really, really, really as hard as they can to make that not happen.
Yeah, so, well,
fight the good fight, folks.
Here's something you might want to know. He runs a religious-themed charity, no surprise. That charity is very charitable to him, apparently.
Oh, is it?
He took a he has a $540,000 mortgage, courtesy of them, I guess. Let's see.
Wow.
Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore had a deal to collect $180,000 in annual salary for part-time work from the legal charity he founded, and ended up with a $500,000 stake in the group's headquarters, records and interviews now show. Property, charity, and tax records reviewed by the Associated Press show that the state's former chief justice received direct payment of $448,000 over the 6 years he served as president of the Foundation for Moral Law and was given a $540,000 mortgage on the charity's building when the group said it couldn't afford to pay his salary. So
money.
People give money to charity. They give him a salary that is a hell of a lot more than I make.
Yeah.
And they also basically give him, I guess, this – I mean, they effectively bought a house for him. Is that what they, this means?
It means, that at one point they gave him property instead of cash. Right. Well, I hope that I hope that bodes ill for his political career, because
I doubt it.
Yes,
but I'm still bitch about
I'm sure the people fighting against him will use that as to their best advantage.
In post-consequence America.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't that guy
I know. We were done with him.
Yeah, we dealt with him like 15
years ago. And now
he's
back like some freaking cockroach.
Yeah. You know, you try to run a country where we, like, you know, we don't have draconian, over-the-top punishments for iniquity.
Uh-huh.
And then you just – we eventually wind up with a crop of these jackholes who take advantage of that and do things that in any reasonably run country would get them run out of town on a rail.
Yeah.
And they just hang around. They just hang around and can come back.
It's like a superhero world. You catch the bad guys, you put them in prison, but gosh, two more issues down the line, they're back out again causing havoc.
He's
not in prison.
But did he spend time in prison?
I don't think so either. Yeah,
see,
which is also
that
would
have been a punishment of some kind for what the crap he has pulled.
But post-consequence America.
Which was involved, like, directly opposing the ruling of the Supreme Court on gay marriage.
Yeah, he's holding...
Didn't he get kicked out of his
contempt of court and stuff like that,
Okay.
Contempt of country, basically, yeah.
Whew. All right. Well, I think that's all we can say about him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jeremy writes, Jeff, I don't know how often you get this question, though I'm willing to bet it's a lot, but I'd like to know why you no longer make an appearance on The Atheist Experience. Your input and opinions were my favorite part of the show growing up. Would you consider making an appearance in the future? I'm sure it would be quite the pleasant surprise for veteran fans of the show. Well, that's
funny he should ask.
It's funny you should ask me that, Jeremy, because I was just wondering why you're not taking several hours of your day every other week to do a thing for me. Because that seems only fair. We're all volunteers here, Jeremy. We don't get paid. I have a limited amount of time, which I am devoting to this show right now, and that is the answer to your question. And while I'm glad that people would have enjoyed the stuff I've done in other places, I get to decide what I'm going to do right now, and this is what I'm interested in right now. Nevertheless, there is a – what is it? How many year? 20-year anniversary? show coming up this weekend.
This weekend, yes.
Which I will be participating in. Because I don't hate the old show, and there's no feud or nothing going on. I just have a finite amount of time, and I'm spending it the way that I feel like. So you'll enjoy that.
And then
get off my back.
Make sure you are following the Atheist Experience YouTube channel, because there's going to be an extra show this week with a bunch of old timers like Jeff.
Dun, dun, dun.
yeah, old timers.
And while we're at it, if you're following people on YouTube, the nonprofits.
Woohoo.
Follow them. Like everything we do.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Yeah. So
that was a real short letter. Also, we're breezing
short and to the point.
And that's how we like them.
Breezing through these news articles ones coming in a couple up. Of paragraphs each.
Okay.
The Guardian.
Avatar.
Catholic archbishop.
Oh boy.
I was just trying to find who to attribute it to.
Curate your shit, man.
Yeah, I should do that. Ugh, God damn it. Okay, anyway.
Who?
The Guardian reports that the Catholic Archbishop in Sydney, Anthony Fisher, is urging a no vote on a same-sex marriage bill.
Right.
And then says, completely contradicting himself, that state should keep out of the bedroom.
Whoa, what?
That's right. They should keep out of the bedroom by imposing restrictions on exactly what can go on there.
In the bedroom, yes. Right. Great.
This was submitted by Neil Bartlett on Twitter.
That's just awesome.
So religious believers would be vulnerable to discrimination suits, and some could lose their jobs, promotions, businesses, and political careers if same-sex marriage is legalized.
What? Now, wait a minute. Are they going to be doing that stuff that would get them in trouble in the bedroom? Are they going to be going into people's bedrooms and, like, you know, denying services to them and stuff? No, they're
going to
be doing
that.
They're not going to be doing that in the bedroom. The state is doing its job where it belongs, out in public.
Yeah. God.
Yeah, and like, if they're making anything illegal, and I haven't read this law, but I'm going to assume they're not going to stop you from thinking that gay marriage is not okay. They're just not going to let you do it. I mean, they're not going to stop you from doing it.
Right.
The state has no business telling us who we should love and how, sexually or otherwise, he told the St. Mary's Cathedral congregation.
That's his job, right? God.
That's astonishing.
The only kind of friendship the state has a proper interest in recognizing and regulating is heterosexual marriage, because that's what leads to children. New citizens.
Oh,
gives them the best start in life. That's his argument.
So, yeah, for people like that, you know how you're allowed to think about cutting your neighbor's head off with a chainsaw, for example?
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Amongst a zillion amongst a zillion other illegal things that you are allowed to think, right?
Yeah.
This is like that.
I mean,
they punish you for
Christianity.
Doing it. They punish you for doing it.
Yeah.
Right? This is like that. They will punish you for being jerks to other human beings because you don't like their gender.
Right. But in Christianity, if you've committed adultery in your heart, that's how it goes. You've done it for real.
Thought
maybe
crime.
He's just misunderstanding the law because that's how he's used to thinking about law.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Murder is illegal. Even thinking about murder is illegal.
Yeah.
In Christianity, yeah. Yeah.
And that's
They want to have it both ways. They want they want the within their own cult to be able to set up their draconian evil rules that support this kind of intolerant crap. And they want to browbeat the secular government into not standing up for the rights of people that they're against.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Jerks. Do you still have that story up?
Yeah, I do.
By any chance? I'm just curious when that's from, because I haven't been closely following the Australian thing. I know that this is going on over there.
That was from 3 days ago, October 15th.
Does it say – would you just take a moment and scan the story? Does it say when their referendum, right? It's a referendum. That's going to happen?
Same-sex marriage postal – what? The note –
because I just thought we might – pay that lady $30 to. Oh, we didn't talk about that in public. We talked about that before the show.
Right.
I got into a little spat with this lady on Facebook who was a friend of a Facebook friend, apparently, and invited me to like her page about Reiki. Not Riker.
No.
Unless you're confused that maybe
third
we're still
Reiki.
Back to Star Trek again. No, Reiki.
Reiki.
Reiki. I don't know. It could be pronounced.
Reiki heart.
And I didn't. Whatever. I did not like it. And I took a moment to talk about why. You know, she was for evidence that it's a real thing. She posted this story to this link to a Mayo Clinic article, which it's unfortunate that the Mayo Clinic has got itself tarred with crap like this. But all that they said about Reiki is that it's a form of relaxation.
Mm. Yeah.
Which can be. Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. But what this lady does is I looked at some of her services that she offered. For $30, she will magically send Reiki energy to you while you sleep.
Cool.
Not only that, she insists that Reiki energy can travel through time. So if you need her to send it to you, I guess, in the past.
Uh-huh.
Or something that would work also. She'll take $30 no matter when it is that you want. So I thought we might send her $30 to send Reiki energy to the
referendum
to support the correct side of this referendum or not.
Hey,
that was a lot of explanation to bring people up to speed to a little in joke that I mentioned after I realized, we hadn't talked about that.
Since Reiki energy goes through time, it doesn't matter when the referendum is.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
You can retcon the whole damn thing.
You can retroactively make it have not happened
if
we send her enough money.
That's right.
See how that works?
That's awesome.
It's brilliant.
I'm going to offer to do the same for $25. People can send me their money, and I will do exactly as for them as she would.
I'm mounting a Kickstarter.
That is a deal. Yeah? You sure you don't want to go for a two-for-one deal? Okay.
Oh, man.
So, did you find the date on the when it's going to happen?
Actually, it looks to me like nothing is going to happen. There was a postal survey which went out with 11 million forms were returned, and the survey indicated that 59% of the survey respondents stated that they would be in favor of legalizing gay marriage, and 38% were against. And so this archbishop was begging people
incensed
to say no on the survey because by launching a PR campaign, I guess he thinks
he should be sending money to that lady. It's a Catholic church. They got tons. He could make it retroactively come out the opposite way.
That's right.
But it's not clear to me, and maybe some Australian listeners can write to us, but of course by the time we get around to talking about it in 2 weeks, it'll be way too late.
Yeah.
So it's not like that there's a deadline on which
there's no impending legislation.
Sort of, they're tabulating the votes as they come in, I guess. Maybe by next episode we'll get
I don't know if this is ever intended to actually impact anything.
Right. Okay. Well, it's going to
a poll.
It would embolden legislators, presumably, in one direction or the other, which if it's in the correct direction, could be a very good thing.
It also says the officials running the poll were surprised that so many people on either side were so fired up to turn out for a non-compulsory postal ballot.
Right.
or am I missing?
Have you seen what's going on here in the United States?
Is a postal ballot something that's actually accomplishes something in Australia?
I don't know.
I can't delve far enough into Australian law to understand what's the complaint here.
Maybe somebody will explain it to us.
The postal ballot. Ballots go insane and start shooting places.
What?
Oh, okay. The minister personally opposes changing the law but has pledged to vote for it in Parliament if the Yes campaign is successful. What's going on in Parliament?
There's some sort of thing going on in Parliament. You know, this is just a rabbit hole. All right, it keeps leading deeper and deeper.
While you look that up, I will do another letter.
Into
that?
The Australian psyche.
Roel from the Netherlands says, you were talking about the devil in the Bible and wondering where some of the ideas come from that don't seem to originate from any Bible stories.
Mm-hmm.
Some ideas are from works like Dante or Faust, which seems rather late, of course. By the way, have you guys ever heard of the Cathars? As far as I know... Insofar as I know, they were somewhat feminist dystheists, D-Y-S-theists.
In what?
I don't know.
Oh, wait.
They were somewhat, the Cathars were, insofar as he knows, they were somewhat feminist dystheists.
Wait, is this real life or is this like a specific fictional world?
This is in the real world. The Cathars were actually a people.
I gotcha. I mean, it sounds like race.
I do have two more letters about gaming and religion, but I'm not doing one of those right now. A very special and curious bunch of Christians in the south of France who got their own crusade against them, the Albigensian Crusade, 1209 to 1229. In the Old Testament / Judaism, Satan is just a title, like an antagonist. In the New Testament, the title Satan is collapsed into one person, maybe somewhat influenced by Zoroastrianism's cosmic dualism.
Oh, my God.
In Islam, Satan was created as a being of fire, not just him, but all jinns, which is where we get the term genie. They were all made from fire. The race of angels were made from light, and the human race from mud/clay. Satan/Iblis, I guess that's Satan in Muslim. Muslim isn't a language. Islam. Yeah. And I don't know if that's a... I don't know what the language is called. Didn't want to bow before Adam because he thought fire was better than mud/clay. Also thought angels ought not to bow before Adam. Therefore, he was cast down to hell for his hubris by God. In the Yazidi belief, a special group of Kurds, most Kurds are Sunni Muslims, their peacock angel did not want to bow before Adam because he loved God so much. I guess because the peacock angel loved God so much.
Right.
After his tears quenched the fires of hell, God forgave him and all was okay again. So that's why the Yazidis worship this angel as the most best. The bestest. This is a role from the Netherlands. Right. And this is why they're persecuted as devil worshipers by Muslims, mostly.
Wow.
So to one of your questions, the bit of Christian myth where Satan ought to bow down to Adam seems indeed to be Islamic, and lots of other notions of Satan have been later associations like Dante, Faust, and the snake in Eden as well, not to speak of modern pop culture. But there are lots and lots of fascinating stories about sort of similar characters and relationships with their creator God. As to your other question, does Satan work for God or is he God's enemy? The answer is obviously yes, he works for God.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I looked up distheism.
Oh, yes.
And briefly, it is the belief that a god, goddess, or singular god is not wholly good, as is commonly believed, such as the monotheistic Ooh. Religions of Christianity and Judaism, and is possibly evil. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Just as God is there before the beginning and after the end of time, with Mary being his birth mother, stuff doesn't have to make sense because it can just be a mystery or a deeper mystery. By the way, thank you a lot for talking about my D&D email a few episodes back. That was my international podcast debut.
Cool.
You're welcome.
It's our pleasure. And like I said, I got more gaming-related theism stuff because people can't stop talking about it. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
What do you got?
Oh, we're going to keep talking about this Australian marriage thing because followed the trail to a third article posted on theguardian.com, which is about the most reputable site I can think to discuss this. And they've got a very lengthy Q&A from September 7th. So this has been under discussion for a while. The first question is, how is Australia deciding whether or not to legalize same-sex marriage? And it says they are being asked by the federal government, should the law be changed to allow same-sex couples to marry? And then further down, they ask, why isn't the Australian Parliament deciding this question? And they respond, a nationwide vote is not needed to change the law, but they've basically asked people to respond to this postal survey where they sent out a bunch of messages to which I guess about 11 million people have responded and 2/3 of them are in support of it. So, yeah, this does seem like –
I suspect it's a non-binding poll.
Right.
Probably.
It sounds like what I suspected, which is that they're just
testing the water.
Yeah, they're testing the waters and looking for how much trouble are we going to get into if we do this obvious basic human decency sort of thing.
Yeah.
Do we have enough creeps in our country to who will be up in arms if we do this?
Yeah, the fact that you even have to ask is just sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the questions further down is, what if I glitter bomb my ballot? Thanks, Guardian, for the hard-hitting questions.
Yeah.
The answer was, the ABS has warned that including extraneous material may result in a vote not being counted.
Counted, right, right.
Apparently, the people running this thing have indicated that they are likely to go along with public opinion. Uh-huh. So, yeah, this matters.
Yeah, and public opinion is pretty cogently stated by the results of that poll.
Sure.
So, yeah.
As it is time and again. Like, it's been gaining steam everywhere for years and years, and the people who oppose it are gradually dying off because they're all
grumpy idiots. Yeah.
Right.
It's about 8:30. Should we do any of our special segments yet?
Yes.
It's possible.
Which one first?
Now Dennis and I are staring at each other. Dennis is gesturing at me.
Dennis has been going before Russell for a while, so let's do it the other way around.
Yeah. Okay, that means it's time for Shit. Internet apologists.
Say.
You inflected that differently this time. Nice. Nice.
So I tweeted this at myself, but I think it was because somebody private messaged me directly on Facebook, and I definitely would forget it if it was just sitting in my inbox, which is why I'm explaining that I can't credit the person who sent it to me because – I haven't dug through my old inbox messages. But this is from thegospelcoalition.org by a minister named Dave Harvey explaining three things not to do after you preach.
I can think of a few things.
Look yourself in a mirror. Say Yahweh backward three times.
For starters, do keep your pants on.
Do not pump your fist.
That was a joke, right?
Victory. Yes.
Okay, good.
The conclusion of a sermon is a dangerous moment for a preacher. Okay.
Right.
I don't know where this guy's going. I don't even know
it's
who this is directed
to stop
at.
Stop talking. Yeah.
He has just spent 30 to 45 minutes in an expository deluge, dumping his study and zeal on his congregation. This guy fancies himself a poet.
Uh-huh.
The 10 to 20 hours of sermon preparation are now ancient history, and he's climbed into his car for the drive home. Most likely, he's exhausted emotionally, spiritually, and physically. If you're called to preach, you leave it all in the pulpit. I've been there, and over the last 30 years, I've learned some valuable lessons about what I should and shouldn't do during a sermon. Here are three key lessons. Number one, don't let down your guard.
What?
You're done preaching, and now don't let down your guard?
So you're a guy who preaches professionally, and you've just been paid to talk to an audience, and apparently you're in danger after this.
Yes.
Let's find out why. Preaching.
Is it the tomatoes that people are now liable to throw at you? Is that it?
Could be. Preaching picks a fight with the enemy each week. It pleased God through the folly of what we preach, Paul observed, to save those who believed, 1 Corinthians 1:21. This means sinners are snatched from the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, Ephesians 2:2.
What?
God uses preaching as a means to change people, to spring them from the enemy's dominion. Satan has an opinion about gospel preaching. It must be stopped.
Wouldn't it be more effective to stop you before you start preaching, though? I don't mean to criticize Satan's tactics. I'm just saying, you're probably on record somewhere as a preacher before you even start doing this crap, right? Shouldn't he firebomb you from hell before you even open your trap?
Open up
sinkhole and swallow you. Why are you especially more vulnerable after you've just done it than before?
Good question.
That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, you've attracted his attention, I guess.
Wait, so Satan doesn't know you're a minister except while you're actually flapping your gums?
Yeah, I guess. But then, that must be it.
Then the second best thing to do would be to attack you the moment you've started.
Wait.
Then he can identify
I've
you.
I've got an answer to this.
Oh, really?
I think you're in danger of being attacked by Satan all the time, including before and during the preaching. No. But the thing is, after the sermon, you're typically spent and empty, which is another way to say you're vulnerable.
You're vulnerable.
To an airstrike. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it says.
Yeah.
So you
might go so far as to say these people are empty in their head all the time, but...
Are they granting the Satan character, the father of lies and air and whatever it is, are they granting him omniscience
omnipresence? They're suggesting that the preacher has some sort of stockpile of energy, right, that is used for defensive purposes and either gets used up or redirected or something during the preaching.
Yeah.
So that it says you're spent. So after the preaching, you're empty of this. So what good is being on your guard? It must be in gaming terms. This gives you some sort of modifier against being defeated by the Satan, right?
And
you spend the thing,
all your energy,
the thing that's giving you a defensive bonus.
You have nothing to power up your
preaching.
Defenses.
So you need a rest period so that you can
That's what the Satan will attack you during.
That does.
So how
make sense.
Do you keep your guard up if you've blown?
And
all
how do you
your,
recharge?
If you've blown all your energy,
how do you?
Oh, I mean,
yeah,
you have
you
to
recharge your wand
or something.
Yeah.
Does it come back over time? Do you have to return to your headquarters and do you have to sleep? right? Do you have to do an incantation or something? Right. Does it explain? Presumably, he's assuming that preachers would already know how to do this.
I don't know, but this next bit is maybe taking us in a different direction.
Okay,
it says,
sure.
All right. Your flesh
is trying to work out the mechanics. That's all.
Your flesh is hard at work, also, and preaching stirs temptation.
Wow. Okay. Does it?
Seriously?
I'm wondering if like preachers have like sexy people throwing themselves at them.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe.
To get a boner at the pulpit? What the hell?
On the one hand.
So that's where all my energy went to.
I tell you.
On one hand is pride over how God is using you.
Uh-huh.
The other hand, condemnation over how he isn't. Then there's actual message in which you've expended many words.
That's a third hand.
No, and he didn't also mention the hand for that one.
Well, on the one hand, there's this. On the other hand, there's that. And then there's also this third thing. I'm sorry. Whether he said it's a third hand or not, we're getting into what are those guys from Star Trek? The three-armed, three-legged dudes from the animated show?
I don't know those guys.
I don't remember. Edoans. I think it's Edoans.
Ah, okay.
Where men preach, flaws abound. If you've preached for any amount of time, you know every message has some deficiencies. I really want a specific thing about what he thinks is going to happen to you, because he's hinting at a lot of scary stuff, but I don't know what he's actually worried about.
It's just staying on guard.
Satan worms his way into you or something.
Staying on guard just does not seem to be sufficient advice without being specific about what that entails.
That's right.
Right.
Right. I mean, okay, so then, again, in gaming terms, staying on guard may make it more difficult for Satan to catch you by surprise, but that's only part of this. He's piled on all this like spent energy and these three-handed things. That
seems like a lot of metaphor
where you've
here.
Got distractions going on.
Can someone stand guard for you?
You'd think, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like you'd get a bunch of people and they'd
keep some prayer warriors circling about you they would have some kind of zone of control and keep the Satan from getting to you.
Right.
Before they entered melee with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless, you know,
standing watch.
Maybe Satan does a great big area attack. They can get those people too. Maybe what people should do for safety is if you're worried about an area effect attack, what you want to do is scatter your forces. So what people should do the moment they see somebody start preaching is just scatter. Scatter.
Sure.
Because Satan's going to come for that guy, and you do not want to be caught.
No, you don't want to be caught.
You don't want to be caught in the area effect.
And remember,
we're talking Satan. It's got to be at least three hexes.
Remember especially that if you see circles on the ground, you're usually not supposed to stand in them.
Yeah,
especially if they're red, they're probably fire. And if they're green, they might be poison. So just play it safe and don't stand in any circles unless you know somebody can heal with
unless
those
you
things.
Know they're a circle of protection. Then
Right.
We're still on one of three.
Yeah. we ran with that a little bit.
But before I leave number one, I'm going to read this one more bit where he tells you what to do. He says,
Oh, good.
It's not helpful. Before, during, and after attacks, run to the good news of the gospel.
Attacks?
Oh, it's a charging station.
Yeah, I guess. Attacks? What form do these attacks take?
The attacks are saying a bunch of words in front of people who are listening to you or playing on their iPhones.
What?
Wait, what?
Well,
are the attacks?
Preaching is an attack. You are performing an attack devil.
But this whole article is about the danger faced by the preacher right after having preached.
Yeah. So.
So.
The preaching is the attack.
But then it says before, during, and after.
Well, I told you he's not saying you're not vulnerable. He's just saying that after you preach, you're likely to let your guard down. And
right. You'll breathe that sigh of relief.
All right.
And as in any movie, that's the moment you're attacked. Yeah.
Yeah. Because preaching
I totally think then that what you need like hirelings. Just go ahead. If it's D&D, you know, go ahead and avail yourself of the hirelings you're allowed to have because they can run interference.
They'll carry the crucifixes and the spikes and
if
stuff
you're
like that.
Playing an online role playing game, just carry a lot of stacks of food that'll heal you up.
Sure,
in like
a lot of healing
seconds.
Potions. Sure.
Yeah, I always end. I think I've mentioned before. I always end games with like 500 potions in my inventory because I'm like,
awesome.
What if I need more later?
Also, presumably, you know, they're supposed to be, these preachers are supposed to be like, you know, agents of an omnipotent God. And the unstated implication here is that the time when you've just finished preaching on that God's behalf is the time when you can least count on him to step in and offer
right.
you some protection for your service.
Great.
Right? You just totally say, okay, thanks. You did the preaching. Good job. I'll wander over here now and just leaves you completely vulnerable. So it's up to you to provide your own defenses at
okay.
that stage.
So number two.
Right.
Are we jumping back to two because you went on?
No.
No, we haven't moved on.
Oh, my gosh. I thought that. Okay.
We're still on
right.
one
all
of
right.
three.
I thought three was
right,
the thing
right.
about
come on.
Before, during, and
two.
After.
No, that was just okay. each
yeah.
one wow. is many paragraphs
yeah, yeah,
long.
Yeah, yeah.
Number two, so number one was don't let your guard down. Number
sure
two is don't listen to yourself.
I've heard some of these sermons, and I think that's really
no.
good advice.
Wait a minute. He wrote this down. Does that mean he shouldn't listen to this?
Yeah. Well, this isn't a sermon.
Ah, okay.
So this isn't a sermon, and so it doesn't apply to the guy writing the article.
Right. When you're under attack, well, this is after the thing, so you should probably listen to yourself during the sermon.
Ah, okay.
oh, okay.
No,
I've got
no,
it.
No, when you're doing the sermon, this is good. This is great advice. When you're doing the sermon, like wear headphones with like some really, really loud music.
Yeah. Noise canceling.
So you can't hear yourself think.
When you're under attack, your soul will be loud. Accusing thoughts will
what?
Bang on the door of your mind. Self-doubt. He's like. You're going to sit there after the sermon
your
going,
soul will be
wow,
filled with self-doubt.
Am I actually
okay.
full of shit? And
yeah.
should I not?
So perhaps I shouldn't be lying to people.
Don't think about it.
Right.
That's the advice. Accusing thoughts will bang on the door of your mind, demanding your attention, or maybe self-inflating ideas, ones where your self-regard catches flight and you think of yourself more highly than you ought, which for no reason at all, those five words are just lifted from a Bible quote.
Right.
Hold on. This is the one thing I've ever heard in
yeah.
any of these shit internet apologists say
yes.
that I think is actually kind of laudable.
Yeah,
laudable.
This is advising people who are like in a position of authority not to let it go to their heads. And I think that is an excellent piece of advice.
It also sounds like he's telling them don't be introspective.
No, he just finished. Yes, a second ago he finished saying don't be introspective. Now he has moved on to don't think too much
bit.
Of yourself. I'm talking
right,
about
right.
this one teeny tiny microscopic
yeah.
point. This is good. People
I can
in general
take that another
need to
step.
Not think too much of themselves.
One thing that really bugs me about like people who have YouTube channels where they just do a monologue
yeah.
about their opinions.
Yeah.
Many of them are good and interesting, but I've seen way too many people who spend time talking to themselves and nobody else and
right.
start to think that they know everything because they don't have anyone calling them out on their bullshit.
Sure.
And I think charitably, this guy could be saying something valid right there.
Yeah, that's all
okay.
I wanted to say.
Number three.
Oh, you want to skip?
Oh,
all the
is there more in number two?
Into?
Go for it.
Quiet your soul by trusting the Lord with the results of your sermon. Quiet your soul by fixing your thoughts on God and not your performance.
Boy. Okay.
Ignore the attack you're experiencing.
What?
The attack by Satan.
Ignore the attack. I'm sorry. This is really just poor strategic advice.
Yeah.
Tactical advice.
Yeah.
You
never ignore an attack.
I thought the whole thing about point one is to not let your guard down. How can you simultaneously not let your guard down against an attack
and
ignore
it.
The attack? You can't do it. That's not. That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
on
you're
any
right. Because right next paragraph it says, "Once you've entrusted your sermon to God, you're done talking.
Right.
Give your mind a rest.
Right.
How is that not letting your guard down?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, but
I think
just
he's
got
some severe logical problems.
He just
with
got
this whole
through saying
three.
Ignore the attack. So,
wow.
I don't get it.
Distract
he's all over
yourself.
The map.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. All right. So maybe. So he's sort of called the self-doubt thing. He's sort of called that the attack, right?
Yeah.
That the attack is coming from within.
So
or
if you
have just said
pride,
you have just
your pride could also be the attack.
You have just said a bunch of complete bullshit to a room full of wide-eyed, trusting fools.
Yeah. Right.
And you might be feeling bad about yourself. So, that's the attack.
Yeah.
So then you want to not let your guard down. You want to be ready to feel bad about yourself. And then you need to not listen to your being feeling bad about yourself.
Right.
That makes it all make sense.
Yeah.
And
now
I
you can preach again.
And now I withdraw my comment. Because
that's despicable.
No, wait, no, excuse me. That actually doesn't cover the you know, maintain some semblance of humility. No, I guess that covers everything else except that one thing.
Yeah.
I'm still with him on that.
All right.
So there is a, that is a huge problem. And it has nothing to do with religion per se. I mean, in all walks of life, people get a little bit of power and it goes to their heads.
Yep.
So
like
what's
us.
Next?
Look at us.
Number three.
Number three. Oh, boy.
Don't fish.
What?
Don't fish.
For compliments.
Go fish. Oh, okay.
Well, number three does just say don't fish. But
okay.
I had to scan ahead to find out what
for
the hell you're saying.
Because
preaching stirs both accusation and admiration, you'll be tempted to go fishing for compliments.
This seems like an extension of the thing that I actually kind of agree with them about.
Sure.
So, all right, sure.
You'll ask leading questions designed to elicit positive feedback. A kind of identity booster.
Is this related to the whole thing about like self-flagellation by priests? Is that connected to I got doubts and so I got to punish myself?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm just curious.
It's good to remember that most preachers get more encouragement in a month than other professions get in a decade. So
yeah.
Don't fish.
Yes.
And when a compliment,
not just encouragement, they get like you know special deals at local businesses and all kinds of
yes, and you might include
all kinds
the word,
of bootlicking crap.
Yeah, and you might include the word undeserved in there somewhere too. That would be good.
Yeah.
When a compliment does come,
Oops,
sorry,
it's an attack.
No,
when a compliment does come, and it's an attack. So grab that person around the throat and throttle them in self-defense.
No. Shucks.
Transfer the glory to God.
Ah, right.
All right.
And.
Yeah.
As if there's a difference.
For goodness sake.
He's your imaginary friend. And if you any glory that goes to your imaginary friend that you were saying that you are representing is in fact going to you, and you're fucking lying to yourself if you pretend otherwise.
Now, and?
For goodness sake, don't listen to your own podcast. Oh, I think I see where he's coming from more now.
Is that what he says?
Yes.
Literally? Okay. You're supposed to.
So this guy is a podcast preacher.
So you're supposed to deflect the compliments.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
What about the criticism?
Probably put the blame on Satan.
It doesn't talk about what
deflect
to do with the criticism?
Deflect the criticism too?
Put that on God. Put that on God. They don't ever do that, right? So that's obviously not the answer he's going to give.
In the previous one, he said. Be still and know that he is God, which is a Bible quote. Doing this both critiques and keeps both critiques and compliments in their rightful place. Oh, so you should blame God if you preached a bad sermon.
Okay.
Right?
No, I think that's probably meant to be interpreted as the criticism should roll off your back because you know that you're doing this for the Almighty God of the universe.
Right.
Yeah.
Not like you're name dropping or anything,
okay.
But yeah.
Here's why you don't listen to your own podcast. You are hopelessly subjective when it comes to evaluating your own sermon. You poured 15 to 20 hours into the preparation.
What a freaking genius.
Which means objectivity really?
Pour into the preparation of our podcast, guys?
Well, if we're talking total man hours, yeah. I think Vern and Mark are doing more work than we are.
So we're not including
them. You're producing the whole thing yourself.
We're just in our calculations.
You're welcome,
it's obviously
Mark.
Higher than this. You guys could chime in with the numbers. We'd be happy to hear them.
Sure. How many hours?
Well, let's see. To get here and do the show.
Oh, that's travel time. We're counting that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's half hour round trip.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
So an hour round trip. Oh, half hour round trip?
Yeah.
And
it's two people, though. So call it a 1 hour for travel.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
Is your travel?
It's a little misleading how much time I don't spend on the podcast because I managed to offload the job of looking up news to all the good people on Twitter and Facebook.
Right.
If I didn't do that, I'd have to do way more prep.
Yeah, I pretty much
time do you do gathering that together from people? Half an hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
I pretty much spend an hour doing the intro.
And I spend about that much time going through listener mail.
Sure.
Okay. And guys in the control room, can you give us a number of how many hours you guys put into prep per show?
Turn on a microphone, maybe.
We can't hear you. Maybe they're not going to give it to us. Well, that's one. Okay. That's,
most of it's post, so about an hour, 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
Each or total between you. Because if you're both working at the same time, that's double the hours. Plus
sitting here. Vern's got an hour. I got about an hour.
So another 2 hours. So two in engineering, one in you know what? I'm going to bump that up to 2 hours because we have even more people on the staff, right?
It seems to
me
like 2 hours
of travel time. That's four. 1 hour preparing the letters. That's five. 1 hour for the injury. That's six and a half. And how many?
15 20. To 20 hours. But wait a minute.
His show must be twice
credit,
as good as ours.
We just collect listener mail and or news links and read them cold. This guy is talking about writing his own full sermon before
full
the thing.
Speech. Oh.
And I can confirm that, like, if I'm asked to give a talk and it's a talk I haven't already given, pulling together stuff. Like, I've gotten better at just writing a set of notes that I can use to ad lib off of. But when I wrote the full talk, I would agonize over that thing off and on for a month.
Yeah.
So
what we're saying
is,
dude, you're doing it the hard way. Do it like us.
Just ask Twitter to give you content.
Yeah, get some stuff to refer to and go, stream of consciousness.
And by the way, thank you so much, all you listeners. You make the show. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
All right. So I'm getting to wrap up because one has gone a little long already.
Oh, boy. And Dennis is
all right.
Okay.
Got a few minutes for his
questions. I lost the tab.
Well,
come on,
can we just wrap it up on him then? Is there really anything much more to go?
Oh, man.
We lost him. Dennis.
Where's the tab? Oh, yeah. He just quotes a famous preacher from 300 years ago who said, I'm never satisfied with the preaching I do.
Fair. We're never 100% satisfied with our show, right? We always we do, some of us, listen to our shows afterward, and it's with an eye toward improvement.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this guy is president of some network, pastor at some church, founder of some website, and author of some books.
We don't care.
Well, I'm just trying to get a context.
And
it's
really important to him that we know that.
Yep.
And that's why you're not supposed to. He was just advising people not to pump themselves up.
Yeah.
Dennis, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I've got a question. Okay. If there's a Satan character, right, and he's got unknown powers of persuasion and he's supernatural and everything like that, does that cast all knowledge that we possess into doubt? I mean, it should. Every observation we've ever made could be influenced.
Well, you've
what
got to.
What if I told you that the world wasn't real?
Exactly. We're in Satan's matrix. I mean,
but this, at the same time,
yeah.
The all knowledge is at the same time attributed to the God enabling you to know the thing that you know. So they're as usual in religion, in Christianity, they're trying to have it the both ways. Yeah, when there's some scientific breakthrough, Christians will say, well, that's a marvelous gift from God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right? sure.
Anytime anything useful gets discovered, it's attributed to God, not to human beings. So what that leads to is we're in a big tug of war between God letting people know important things and Satan.
The father of lies.
Maybe trying to interfere with those things. And at no point is it just human beings figuring stuff out.
Right. And plus, you can't be sure of anything.
Yeah, except that it seems to me this just functions as an excuse, a handy excuse for anything that humans claim to know that the religionists object to.
Yeah.
They can say, oh, that's a lie from Satan.
But you can turn it on what they think.
They're not going to believe that because they're going to say, oh, no, I feel it in my heart that this is from
but
God.
Then they're not. Yeah, okay.
Well, that's just standard operating procedure for Christianity.
Hypocrisy is their bread and butter.
I don't think anyone ever considers or takes the be the right one? And
it's the same. It is ultimately good point, Russell. Yeah. It's the same question as what if the Buddhists are right?
Right. But if it was proved that there was a Satan character, all our scientific observations would then be cast into doubt.
Well, except that as our expert Dan from Canada. No, was it Dan from Canada? No, excuse me. It was our expert Roel from the Netherlands said, in answer to our question, does Satan work for God? The answer is obviously yes. So while it may seem like, of course, anything could be a lie from Satan.
Right.
Anything important, God's going to either be more powerful if you believe that they're not on the same side. Right. God's more powerful and he gets to win if it's important. Or Satan's just going to back off because he works for God.
But
wants you to know the thing, that you're going to know it.
Right.
There's no denying that there are things people think that they know which are wrong.
Yeah.
Right? This is just their ridiculously convoluted, superstitious way of accounting for some knowledge being true and some knowledge being false.
But if a scientist was trying to make a discovery, he couldn't. All observations would be suspect.
Yeah, but that's already true when you go without Satan, because human beings can't accomplish anything, and it all has to come from God. If God does not want to tell that scientist what's going on, the scientist is not going to know what's going on, regardless of whether there's a Satan.
Okay, there is a philosophical precedent. The scientist will come up with something
on his own, which will be wrong.
Yeah.
There's a philosophical precedent for this method, and it's Descartes.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know, like, his most famous statement, I think, therefore I am, right?
Right.
The reason he was bringing that up was because he was expressly concerned that maybe, demons were fooling him all his life.
Right.
And he came up with a solution to this problem, he thought. Which was, okay, so first of all, I think therefore I am. So I'm pretty sure the world exists. And so he discounted solipsism, because there has to be something in which I exist. I think it was a good start.
But I'll make arguments with him.
Take this all the way to addressing the demon question?
Yeah.
Because that's – okay, go ahead.
Okay, so – after that, he went a little off the rails. He was like, well, if I exist, I must have been created, so there must be a God, and the God is probably benevolent. And so the God – like, this is all in – what is it?
Wow.
His Principles of philosophy, I think, or right. Discourse on the Method is where this appeared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and God being benevolent, which we've proved, air quotes,
right. Uh-huh.
Would not let Satan just fool me about everything. I think that was the...
Really?
Yeah, so this was in 1637 that he wrote all this stuff. And I'm citing this proof kind of from memory, but this was the general idea Descartes was getting at.
So God decides when you're to be fooled and when you're not to be fooled. Okay,
sure. And that plays into Satan. Satan really, you know,
and
is
you can't
either
know which is either being fooled and which is not being fooled.
Satan is either not on God's side, but so ridiculously weak that Christians then have to contend with why the hell does God not crush him now? To which the answer is, oh, God's mysterious and outside of time, so he says he's not under any pressure.
Right.
Or Satan just works for God, and he does God's dirty work. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. That would appear to be our show.
All right.
This was a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
We were all in a good mood today. I don't know why. It's not like it's anything happening in the world to justify it.
I'm on 2 days vacation from work. That's my reason.
Ah, there you go.
Part of it is my TV went on the fritz, and I just got it replaced.
So you haven't been hearing news.
I had Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't ever pay for extended warranties and shit, but I did this time for some reason. And boom, this TV went on the fritz, and they replaced it for me. So that was cool. So I'm getting caught up on all my shows.
It's a good story. Heartwarming. His TV went on the fritz. You'll never believe what happens next.
Okay. Jeez. Okay, fine. Yes, yes, that was all about me.
You are
Everybody
clickbait.
Is supposed to pity me. Sorry, everyone. Well, if I don't watch my shows, then I can't be timely with our gags about Orville and whatever all else is going on.
Yeah,
right. Go on, Dick, take us out, will you?
All right. Well, did you notice anything? I didn't. It's almost like the show doesn't exist. No, it's exactly like the show doesn't exist. And you know what? It won't exist in 2 weeks on the 1st of November either. But there is one nagging question. If there's no Brian Stieksma, and he didn't perform I Am the Satellite, a song that doesn't exist, what are we listening to?
Hey there, brother, don't you know? The guy upstairs left us years ago. So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head.